I voted for Donald Trump.
I voted for Hillary Clinton.
I don't think I'm going to be interested at all anymore in any politics.
My ultimate goal is for me to get a green card.
On a day like today, politics do not matter whatsoever.
We knew it was going to be really bad, but even then I was sort of horrified at how bad it got, how quickly.
This week marks the two-year anniversary of the inauguration of Donald Trump as president. And if you could measure these last 2 years in terms of our nation's politics, well, even the well-worn narratives of America's polarized parties don't do justice to the social and cultural divide we seem to be living through today.
Like a lot of journalists, we felt like there was a story we'd missed in the lead-up to that election.
That's John Facile, lead producer of a new one-hour special, 2 Years, Diaries of a Divided Nation, presented by KCRW's political talk show, Left, Right, and Center. John and his team hoped that by focusing their coverage on ordinary Americans, they'd reveal an added dimension to the country's political topography.
We knew that what was about to happen would be very consequential and historic. And so at the beginning of 2017, our project founder, Jesse Dukes from WBEZ, came up with this idea of seeing how the Trump presidency would play out in the lives of ordinary people. For this hour-long piece that's coming out on KCRW, we zeroed in on 6 of those people who we felt like represented different parts of the country and were also dealing with partisanship and the political divide on a very personal level.
And through that personalization, these testimonials often brought to light some of the national conversations that have emerged over the past 2 years, including the Me Too movement. John told me how the renewed conversation of gender equality had had an impact on a participant named Marjorie.
Marjorie is my friend in the small town of Mexico, Maine. She's 78 years old.
In 2016, I voted for Donald Trump.
For most of 2017, she was sort of mixed on Trump.
And everything I hoped he was going to do and was going to happen don't seem to be happening.
But then in October of 2017, after the Harvey Weinstein scandal broke, I called her up and she told me about this assault.
Well, I went to lunch with my girlfriends and there was 8 of us there. And 6 out of the 8 admitted that they had been sexually assaulted back in the 50s and never said anything, never. Well, it made me feel, I'll tell you, a ton of bricks like fell off my shoulder because the same person who had assaulted one of these girls had done it to me and we both said nothing.
She hadn't talked about that for decades, and it really reframed the whole way she saw the world and it changed the way she perceived Trump.
He's no better than the rest. You know, he did it. He shouldn't get away with it.
And she wound up saying that she wouldn't vote for him again because she sort of identified him as a sexual harasser and assaulter. She wound up walking that back. And I know everybody kind of wants the story where a Trump supporter encounters something and changes their mind about Trump. That's not quite what happened. Still, it was very interesting to be on the other end of the phone and listen to her go through that.
The past 2 years have really been a whirlwind. Another turning point was the violence in Charlottesville. What impact did that have on the lives of your subjects?
So there was one person in particular who was really impacted by the violence in Charlottesville. That was Irtifa, a Muslim American woman who lives in Charlottesville. She's a PhD student. She was involved in the counter protests during the Summer of Hate.
A few months after that, the August 12th rally happened. It was the one that got the most attention, and I saw it happen. I saw national media pick up on the level of violence.
It had a really profound impact on her that I think is impossible to overstate.
When the car attack happened, I think it was just like not even in the realm of my imagination that that could happen. I still haven't looked at any videos from that day.
And I think that event is really a traumatizing event. I mean, particularly for people of color, not just the violence, but the images.
And, you know, like, I have to walk the lawn to get to my office to go teach. And that's where, like, I have images burned in my head of Nazis carrying torches, walking down there screaming, you know, You will not replace us. Jews will not replace us.
But at the same time, I think everybody in America, when that happened, sort of formed this instant opinion or had a take, you know, which is what happens with so many political events.
I had only heard what Trump had said.
Adam, who's a white Trump supporter in Texas.
And he said something to the effect of, they're like bad actors on both sides, and not everybody there was a member of the KKK.
The mainstream media, once again, hysterical. Complete meltdown mode today.
When he said that, like, it made sense to me.
Of course, he's rationalizing, and he's trying to justify, you know, Trump's both sides comment.
I don't doubt that there are racist people out there. I guarantee you there's racist people out there. I have to believe in the good in people, or I will see the world as a very scary place that, like, needs to be feared.
And again, a lot of people will hear what he says and find it very, very hurtful. But it was our job to present, to the best of our ability, different experiences. Adam and Irtifa are talking about two completely different things almost, but we had to show that, and we were really asking ourselves, how do you show everyone's point of view in a way that's fair and real?
How did you find the answer? Yeah. I mean, it's subjective for some folks, and for others, mm-hmm. It's not. It's something that there are some norms that should not be stepped over. How do you find that balance?
With that section, we chose clips from Irtifa and Adam where they were talking specifically about perception and perspective of Charlottesville. You can't equate their stories of that event. That's a false equivalency. You know, even Adam says in that section,
and I understand that, yeah, like I'm a middle class white guy, and so I can have the worldview that I have.
I thought that was really astute and interesting that he would be so self-aware in that way. And at the same time, Irtifa is talking about sort of the deep pain that she experienced. And I think that's a really interesting conversation. They're both kind of aware of where they're coming from.
What were some of the big changes that you noticed across the board? Were there major themes that these six individuals really exemplified for you?
I'd say the change we observed really was just how tired everybody became with politics and the current state of partisanship. There was a buzz term that went around late last year, the exhausted majority. I think exhaustion is an apt term.
John, I have a question, though, John.
Yeah,
when you say the exhausted majority, are we just plain old exhausted?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like, very simply, yes.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, can we just say, like, we're all burned out a little bit, not just millennials, but all Americans, I feel, are somewhat just tired. It's been a slog.
Right. And I would think that there's an opportunity right there, right? If we're all exhausted, maybe more people are open to conversations and finding solutions and compromises, and we can build bridges.
John Facile is the lead producer on 2 Years, Diaries of a Divided Nation, airing on KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. John, thanks so much for the project, and thanks for your work.
Thanks, Tanzina.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.